It's been almost 4 months to the day since episode 23, which is the last time we've had our friend Andy on. But we have once again been graced with his presence. Since then, a lot of Assassin's Creed news has been released, which brings us into episode 40 of Marooners Talk, titled Assassin's Creed 3, Zombio Auditore's Revolutionary Adventures. I'm calling it now. There will be a zombie expansion that brings Ezio back.
I would rage quit the franchise right
now. Oh my god. I hope. Oh, that. Just to troll Andy, I really hope that something like that's done. Well, I mean, obviously, because I changed my Twitter avatar yesterday to reflect that, but. Yeah. So no zombies in Assassin's Creed for you, Andy?
No. Thankfully.
Never?
Never, ever. Hear me now, Ubisoft. I'm saying it again. I seem to say this every time I'm recording something or podcast-wise. There's ever zombies in Assassin's Creed. I don't care who it is. I'll be on the next flight to Montreal and someone will be getting their ass kicked.
What if it's Gabe? Like, what if Gabe did it?
I will kick Gabe's ass if Gabe was the one who signed that off.
Aw, poor Gabe. He's so nice.
Well, you know, zombies have made a pretty big impact in Call of Duty. What if there's a zombie Ghost Recon?
I just stopped playing Ghost Recon. I should probably explain, like, the whole zombie thing. It's just, I just think it's complete. It's like FPS games, right? It's like, you don't need another FPS super brown shooty dude bro shooter, and you don't need another zombie game. We just really don't need any more. So to then take the decision to put zombies in your game just to spice it up, and it's just sort of like, no, really, come up with something else. We're all talking about lack of innovation in the industry and stuff, and then you go put zombies in your game. It's like, come on now. Really? You all sat down around a table, some of the brightest minds in our industry, and you thought, zombies, and everybody went, yeah.
No, I agree. That's one of the biggest, aside from other problems I had, but it's like in Red Dead Redemption,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, why the fuck exactly. Did there need to be zombies?
That one handled it well, though. That was so tongue-in-cheek and hilarious. I appreciated that.
Yeah, but at least it was unnecessary.
Which is, I don't know, I enjoyed that one, but yeah, you're right, it wasn't something I was asking for.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you're going to go ahead and do zombies, you know, it's just like, okay, like Resident Evil, for example, that's been around since the 90s. I swear, it's like,
and
when
it
I say the 90s,
since the 90s.
No, I enjoyed Resident Evil. It's really weird saying, though, it's been around since the 90s, making it feel like it was, I'm talking about, like, the fucking, like, Prohibition era of America. It really wasn't that long ago, I swear. But, you know, it's just like, you had Resident Evil, which there were only a couple games that were like that at the time. You know, you had, well, Resident Evil, and you had Silent Hill and stuff like that. But then now, you have Left 4 Dead, which is, I will say, Left 4 Dead's a really good game. But then you're getting all this other shit where it's just zombies everywhere.
You have a bloated genre of that's survival horror. You already have more than enough zombies to your heart's content in that genre. And I don't mind genres crossing. In fact, I'd be happy if more of them did it properly. But you don't need to have... I mean, that was like... You think about it, the FPS genre, which has titles bursting at the seams, and then you have survival horror, which had titles bursting at the seams. And some bright spark decided... Let's put the two of them together.
Yeah.
So,
well, if it's
yeah.
done well, who? Like, I'm fine with Left 4 Dead because it was done well. It was a fun game. So cool, whatever, zombies. But it's not the only selling point. It's just a new way to make an FPS interesting. That I'm totally okay with. But yeah, stuffing zombies into everything always. And that's sort of like all that they care about. That's how they market the game. And that's how they think people will buy it.
Yeah.
That I'm not so okay with.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, bringing up Left 4 Dead, you know, the first Left 4 Dead was really fun. And I like the fact that it had this experience split up into separate campaigns. And you could go ahead and play online with your friends, and there were like the select characters that you could choose from, and they all had their own exclusive, or not exclusive, but their own unique, you know, personality and background and everything. And then you had the regular zombies, but then you had, you know, the special zombies. And then, you know, you transitioned into Left 4 Dead 2, you know, and it continues the story, but it's not heavy on the story like a Resident Evil game is. And, you know, you go and you have all these extra modes that you could go ahead and play, like Survivor and Scavenger. And then I really like how, and I can't remember the name of it now because it escapes me, but how every week it's something different and something new.
Mutations.
Yeah. So it's like something, you know, where it's, you know, you can only use one kind of weapon, or, you know, it's...
You realize that if Chris listens to this, he's going to be very upset that we discussed Left 4 Dead without him.
I know. Seriously. But yeah, so, you know, they have stuff like that. But then with survival horror, I think that it's kind of twisting a little bit, because you had Dead Space, which I can play Doom 3 with surround sound until my hands want to fall off, because I love that game so much. But if you give me Dead Space, I need to stop after like 15 minutes of playing it, because that makes me want to piss my pants. But, and then you go and you have something like BioShock, which I think, even though I can't play that much of it, because again, it's a game that really does actually kind of creep me out, the concept behind BioShock and Rapture and Big Daddy and the Little Sisters, I think that's really fascinating. And then Singularity was another, you know, shooter survival horror. And that I thought was really well done. So it's, every once in a while you have like a flash, you know, like what Adam was saying, where you have that flash where it's, okay, cool, you know, this is great, this makes sense. And then you have all this weird shit, like, why did you waste money and dev this?
Well, you know, Andy said earlier, it's the cross-genre thing.
Yeah.
If you have a survival horror game, then it's a survival horror game. There are certain tropes you expect to see within that genre. If you're playing a wartime first-person shooter, there are certain things you do not expect to see within that genre, and that are not really... You know, they don't need to be in that genre, like zombies.
Everyone wants to expand their market, and I think that's sort of... I mean, it's the business side of it. Everyone wants to sell more and more and more, and they need to be able to expand their market. So they just they're just starting to cross everything. The people... Yeah, I mean, the people who hold the reins of that, of, you know, whatever edifice you're talking about, Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed, they want to sell more
Final
copies
Fantasy.
Than the last one. Exactly. Well, then they just... Well, I don't know what they're doing.
Run it into the ground.
Sell, yeah, they're not trying to sell anything. They're just trying to make garbage. I don't know what the hell's going on. But they just want to expand. So if they can have a survival horror game, well, let's pull in action people, so we'll make the game more action. And then you just kind of get these joke games and sort of messes that don't have a focus. And then, you know, that's what happens when you can't concentrate on what your game does well.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't remember who I was talking. I think this was when we were playing Ghost Recon the other day. I think, were you there, Andy? I don't know. I mean, if this conversation sounds familiar to you, then yeah, you were there. Excuse me. But, you know, I was just talking about how with where we're at in the gaming industry, we're so apt to just wanting to pump out sequels, because, you know, the predecessor, it made so much money or whatever. And then, you know, we go ahead and we come out with something, or, you know, somebody pitches an idea and they have this unique concept, or they, you know, a new IP or whatever. And a lot of people are just like, no, we don't want to invest money into it. But yeah. I mean, honestly, for all they know, a game could be badass, you know?
Yeah,
it could be what we need.
Yeah, I think we were talking about Activision at that particular point in time in terms of sort of like, you know, just shuttering particular devs because, oh, something didn't meet their expectations, or, you know, some internal projection, the graph wasn't heading the right way for them, or, you know, pre-orders weren't tracking so and so, and they're like, yeah, this isn't going to work. I mean, case in point, Sleeping Dogs, for instance, and the whole thing with that. But you've got all the, I think for me, I always sort of look at it in the, like, I personally don't mind sequels if there's a genuine attempt to move forward in all aspects, so not just in terms of like a story, because you know, you can move a story forward, but then like if you at least try and put some sort of innovation. And right. I know that word gets tossed around a lot of the time. I mean, on the recent conference call, Activision, I think it was Eric Hirschberg who was going, Call of Duty Black Ops 2 represents the most innovation we've had in a Call of Duty title. And I was just sat there going, nope.
We saw a commercial for Black Ops 2 ahead of Dark Knight Returns, and they had that same line in there.
Yeah.
And it made us just laugh in the theater. And we started mocking the screen because of it.
Yeah, well, I think...
But you mentioned, you know, sequels need innovation and they need to bring something more to it. And I laughed because Adam probably has something to say about a sequel bringing a lot of changes and advancements.
Oh, do I? So, yeah, I guess if anyone who didn't read the Darksiders coverage that has been going on all week, yeah, I got to see that game. And I continually am impressed, like, when I think back on it and I start to write about it, on how much they managed to change that game and mix genres in such a successful way. Like, there was not a single part of the game where I was kind of, you know, raised my eyebrows or skeptical of. Like, they just nailed the entire idea of creating a sequel and creating something that was innovative and managed to kind of appeal to more than just action or more than just horror games. So, yeah, it's pretty impressive.
I'm stoked for Darksiders 2. I've been stoked for it since I kept on telling people, and I think I told Tom actually, I said, if you haven't played the original one, you really need to. You owe it to yourself to play it because it's such an underrated title. And I was like, oh, but it's this. And I was like, no, look, dude, just go get it. I'm sure it's cheap, like $5 or something. Just go get it and play it. And I've been seeing a lot of tweets. Obviously, it's their marketing with their Twitter account and Hayden Dalton, who's the producer. But I've been seeing a lot of tweets from people who are like, oh, my God, I've only just discovered this game. What was I doing the whole time it was out? You know, it's I'm looking forward to it.
The first one was good. It just, you know, and I think everyone kind of called it derivative. And I understand that. And, you know, getting to talk to the developers, both the associate producer and the combat director that were there did not work on the first game, but they were obviously dogged by the same comparisons and it kind of made them mad. But because, they admitted that, yeah, it was very, hey, this part's very Zelda, this part's very, God of War-ish. And they kind of just lumped it together. This time they managed to keep the feel of it as far as the mythos in the world. And then, it's an RPG. Like, it's one of the deepest RPGs I've played in a very long time, even more so than like Kingdoms of Amalur, without ever feeling like an RPG, which I thought was very impressive. So if people want to just play combat, it's very combat intensive and they can just kind of pick up big weapons and go on. But if you want to sit there and play with your stats for hours and hours and hours, which I did, you can do that as well. So it was really amazing experience to see that game. So I'm hoping it gets the reaction that it deserves, but
it, yeah, we'll exactly. Yeah.
Well, no, it's funny because, you know, Andy, when you're saying how, you know, a bunch of people that, you know, were telling you, I don't know what I was doing, you know, why hadn't I not, you know, played the game or heard of it or whatever, and touching back on, certain games not doing as well, I think that the companies themselves, the pubs, you know, when they're doing PR and everything like that, I think that they need to understand that they need to push these games more, the new IPs, the ones that aren't, you know, Call of Duty or whatever, because honestly, you probably don't need to do as much marketing and PR for a Modern Warfare or Call of Duty that you would need to do for, like, Darksiders or Blur, you know, and everything. And it's when you just don't want to invest that money because, oh, it's not a big blockbuster, it's not going to sell, it was like 75 million or 750 million in like a few days for like the last Battlefield, or I can't remember what shooter it was now, but I was reading about it earlier this week. But, you know, when I'm thinking about it, it's like, so you're closing a studio because their game didn't sell well, but how much money and how much time and how well did you push for people to even fucking know about the game? So... Yeah. That's on your shoulders. That's on, you know, that's your fault.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think, though, that especially between Activision and EA, it's become an arms race with Call of Duty and Battlefield, where the company that spends the most money keeping their title most prevalent in the minds of most of the consumers is the one who's going to get that sale. And so they'll dump their money into making sure that more non-well-versed gamers, I suppose, see Call of Duty stuff or Battlefield stuff.
Well, those games are easy to market because it's a shooter. Like, people know what they're getting into.
Exactly.
You're talking to THQ, they were even saying they had three different marketing teams handle Darksiders 1. So they were three different marketing ideas and concepts, and no one really kind of understood what the game really was. I think they're kind of hitting that again with this game because the previews and the trailers do not do it justice for what it is. But it's harder to market a very original idea, whereas a shooter, you just show a bunch of people getting shot and you basically have your premise across. No one's going to really have any questions or worry about that. So
yeah, I was going to say, coming back to Activision. Now, I don't know if you guys, I can't remember, but maybe you guys do, but how much push was there for Skylanders when that was coming out? Because I talked to a lot of, Skylanders was made them a ton of money.
And will continue to do so.
Yeah, the number one selling.
And as someone I know on Twitter said, Skylanders Giants will be huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Who was that?
I can't recall. Some brilliant analyst over in England, I think.
But I still talk to people today who are like, I don't have a clue what Skylanders is. And it's like, I can't remember if there was a massive push or if it was at the time when... Was it it was around the time of Modern Warfare 3, wasn't it?
We don't have kids though, right? I mean, I imagine that a lot of that push was in toy stores and with kids' cartoons and during Disney channels and stuff like that. Like, maybe we just didn't see it because they weren't trying to hit us as a market for it.
Yeah,
right.
It's
a very good question.
You don't watch enough TV to.
Well, they had a pretty good presence at E3 back in not this year but last year. Do you remember that?
I wasn't there. So
I was there. Yeah, no, you weren't there.
it was a lot of fun. Tom went in with us into the backstage area, and it was fascinating then. Like, I knew it was targeted mainly for kids. But at that moment, I thought to myself, okay, cool. I'm going to have a little collection of crazy little dudes on my shelf.
Yeah.
And I do. And they're awesome.
Well, I think that part of the confusion with that is, all of a sudden it was like Spyro. And I'm like, oh, okay. It's like, I remember the Spyro games. I played them on PlayStation, like the original one. And the way that the camera moved and stuff, it's kind of made me a little sick because it was like the original Spyro games on PlayStation. I'm sorry. Horrible, 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 horrible camera. Like, just it was.
Oh, yes.
It was hella bad. And so.
That was like the beginning of 3D cameras, though. So.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you something real quick. Jump in. So, are you saying, no judgment, just saying, are you saying that you didn't like the Spyro games because of the horrible camera?
Yes.
Okay. And how did you feel about Resident Evil?
I had issues with the camera.
But you loved Resident Evil.
Because it had zombies in it.
Okay. I'm just making sure that the one metric that you're turning exact same metric.
The camera in Spyro, it actually made me feel sick. The camera in Resident Evil, while frustrating, did not give me a sense of nausea. It's different, yeah.
Spyro made you feel sick. Resident Evil didn't actually let you see anything.
No, but I was fine.
Getting sick.
Yeah, no, I was fine. With Skylanders, like I was saying, it kept talking about, like Spyro, and I kept seeing Spyro, and I'm thinking to myself, so what the fuck, is this a Spyro game, or what's going on? And there's all these little things and stuff, and it kind of, it was, I don't want to say it was hard for me to grasp, but I was kind of like, so what the fuck's going on with this game? What the hell is it? And then, after E3 and everything, and Chris was telling me about it, and he's like, yeah, there's this game, Skylanders, and you get this little portal, and, these little shits, and you go ahead and you put them on, and this and that, and I'm like, I know that. I'm just saying.
But see, I saw it as season 9 of Scrubs. It wasn't really Scrubs anymore, but they still had some of the original people in to tie it to Scrubs.
Yeah, to tie it to,
Skylanders isn't really Spyro, but Spyro was there to tie it to Spyro. Yeah, so that's their big name recognition.
Well, I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that's where the confusion came in, right. You know? Because
I thought it was a Spyro game.
Yeah, right, see? So it's not just me. And so, you know, when Chris went and I think we got a review copy of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The starter kit.
Yeah, so, you know, we got a review copy of it, and I'm watching him play it, and then as soon as the villain comes on, and it's, what is his name now? It starts with a J. The guy who does the voice for Zim. What is his name?
I think you're thinking of the creator.
That's Juan or Joan Vasquez is the creator.
Yeah, Joan Vasquez. I thought he was a voice.
No.
Hold on.
He's the artist and creator, and he did Johnny the Homicidal Maniac and such.
Yeah, he didn't do the voice of Zim, though. It was a different guy. But, as soon as I was playing that, I heard... At first, you don't hear him as Zim. You hear him as Chaos, and he has the big projection head, but then it goes back.
And then when you see him,
and you hear him, and I'm like, dude, it's Zim. So I called her over, and I said, hey, it's Zim.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's as crazy as that
Patrick
sounds.
Warburton, you hear his voice right away.
Yeah, but no, it's like as soon as, you know, I saw that it was, you know, the villain was Zim, I was like, all right, I got to play this shit. Like, I need to play this game. And so, you know, I mean, I have played it, and it's, you know, it's quite enjoyable. The concept, you know, going back to innovation, it's very innovative. It's very unique, and it's...
Yes
and no. It touches on the Pokemon thing, though. Like, that's one thing that stood out to me the most. You know, rather than having all the different cards or whatever, collecting them inside the game, you go ahead and you buy these little figures. So, you know, that kind of sucks because it does... It starts to get really expensive. It starts to get pricey. But I guess what I'm saying is that it's not some of the same crap over and over and over and over being fed to us. So, you know, that there's that.
It will be interesting to see. I think I mentioned this to you as well, Lindsay. When the inflection point for sort of like Call of Duty is. It's because it's like, you know, everybody says, sales are slowing down and this. But then Activision themselves, who are usually on point with these sort of projections, are saying that Black Ops 2 is going to be the next biggest entertainment launch in history, beating what Modern Warfare 3 did, which is kind of like a scary thought. Because when you look back at those Modern Warfare 3 numbers, but it's interesting to see when that inflection point is. And I don't necessarily think EA are going to be the ones to cause it, because for all they're taking market share, they're still attacking Call of Duty on three fronts. They've got Crysis, Battlefield, and Medal of Honor. And if anything, that dilutes their focus, at least for me anyway. I think they'd be better off focusing all of their efforts on making Battlefield a better product. Not saying it's bad, just a better product, a good enough product to be, like you said, Chris, in the consciousness of gamers, where they think, well, that's a legitimate alternative to Call of Duty, as opposed to thinking, I'll hold up for Crysis and not buy Battlefield, or I like Medal of Honor better and not buy Battlefield, you know, kind of thing.
I think those are such different games, though. EA needs to just quit trying to market them all as a Call of Duty alternative. Because, Crysis is not a Call of Duty-like game. I mean,
I'd say it's more like Killzone.
Oh, yeah, easily. And, much better, too. But, Crysis 2 is... I wasn't ridiculously impressed, but the concepts behind it, the gameplay, the way you switch your suits, so much of that game was absolutely brilliant. And Medal of Honor, I think, is a closer comparison to Call of Duty than Battlefield. So I never quite understood what EA was trying to do. If they're just like, oh, well, hey, it's a war game, so it's probably similar. They kind of, I think, are missing a lot with promoting those three games.
Well, and it's crazy because Medal of Honor has been around since, you know, the original PlayStation days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that franchise, you know, most people are going to think that it's a current gen franchise, but I'm like, no, my friends. I remember working at GameStop and, you know, picking up the jewel cases for Medal of Honor.
Well, Medal of Honor was the granddaddy of basically Call of Duty, because a lot of that team that formed Infinity Ward worked on Medal of Honor, didn't they? If I remember quite right.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right, Adam. That's actually even a closer game to Call of Duty than Battlefield is.
Because Battlefield is sort of the more realistic alternative to Call of Duty, it's a much different playing shooter, whereas Medal of Honor is very, very much like Call of Duty. I love both franchises. I'm just terrible at Battlefield. Because it is a much more skill-based FPS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, maybe... No. sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I just think Activision needs to quit trying to compete with one title to be Call of Duty and just make all three of those successful franchises in their own rights. No one's ever going to get to, you know, being in like 1 in 8 households in America. No one else is ever going to hit that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you never know. But no, it's funny, Andy, when you're talking about that, you know, talking about like when is it all going to start to cave in, you know, when are you going to peak and then the shit is just going to go ahead and drop. And I don't think it's just for those particular games. I think it's for the gaming industry in general. And we're starting to get to, because I think it was in the 80s, the mid 80s, when we saw just like a crash in the gaming, you know, industry. And I think we're dangerously close to hitting another one, you know?
You don't think Next Gen's going to give us a little bit of a prop up? Because a lot of analysts are saying, oh, Next Gen's going to be, is going to usher, or a lot of devs seem to think Next Gen's going to give them this new lease of life because they've run out of time and patience with the current gen models. And they think Next Gen's going to breathe new life into the industry. I don't think hardware sales are going to pick up just because people want a new box, but I don't think enough people want a new box that it's going to suddenly be like, you know, Microsoft are hitting the heights of God knows however many units they were shipping in a month, you know, in the good old days. I don't think
Next Gen going to be that big of a leap technologically? I mean, what else are they going to offer? How much further can they go that they can't reach on the current consoles we have now?
Well, I mean,
photorealistic graphics.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's the only thing that's going to drive forward emotional gameplay, apparently.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, it's funny that you said that, Adam, because I was looking, and I don't know how legit this is, so I mean, take it all with a grain of salt, but I was looking at, you know, another 720 leak earlier this week to where the console, it essentially looked like a tower, but what was packed inside of that tower, I was like, holy shit.
That was the dev kit, though.
I know that was the dev kit, but I'm just, you know, and they were saying that really, though, with the dev kit, the only thing that would be additional aside from what would be retail was the amount of RAM that was in there. And I'm like, are you sure? Because if so, like, this is a pretty beast, you know, pretty beastly unit. But you know, I don't know. I think Nintendo's going to get fucked with the Wii U that's going to be coming out. And they are so behind, you know, the current curve and the current trend that's going on, and it's going to hurt them so badly. And it's unfortunate because, you know, I've said it before like countless times, you know, that Nintendo, the NES, that was my very first console ever, and mine still works to this day. And so it's heartbreaking to see something that brought me into this industry, brought me, gave me the passion, you know, and led me to where I am today at the age of 30. And to see, you know, it's like, what the hell happened? Because, you know, it was almost like back then, they were the ones who were ahead of their time. You know, they had the Game Boy. Sega tried to do the Game Gear, and it just didn't work.
I loved the Game Gear. That was a fantastic.
I did too. Game
Boy. Yeah, but compared to the Game Boy, it wasn't practical.
No, I preferred my Game Gear, honestly.
Well, tell it to the people who preferred to buy Game Boy rather than Game Gear.
I was always rocking the Game Boy. I had every single different iteration of Game Boy.
Right?
Until they started doing DS and all that jazz. Game Boy Advance, Game Boy SP. I had them all.
Did you have a micro? Did you have a micro?
The micros were awesome.
I loved my micro. I played Street Fighter Alpha 3 on that almost exclusively. I'd just sit there, and it was because the screen was so small, it was so sharp.
Yeah. But, I mean, so it's just like, you know, we're looking at this, and, you know, I think it was it Andy you were talking about the console cycle that we're in right now, it's been far too long. And I think that's one thing that has been shooting them in the foot. You know, and they're thinking, oh, well, we could go ahead and extend it with the PlayStation Move or the Kinect. And that's all good and fine. You know, whatever, go ahead and release these, you know, additional peripherals. But don't even think for one second and start, you know, deluding yourself that by putting out a peripheral that it's enough to replace coming out with an additional piece of hardware.
I guess maybe since no one's actually said anything about the new hardware, I just don't understand what new hardware is going to bring to the table. I can't imagine anything that is going to tempt me. I know Microsoft's going to put a lot of Kinect functionality in the new box, but I don't care about that. So I mean, what else is there? I mean, better graphics. I mean, at some point, you don't want realistic graphics. I mean, you know, the Uncanny Valley issue. So well, I don't need that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, okay, so again, the game that was Ellen Page is in is for PlayStation 3. It's exclusive. Is it Ellen Page?
Beyond.
Yeah, Beyond. Beyond. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beyond, that's crazy realistic. But again, this is on a PS3. But I think that, you know, with the Xbox, that, you know, they could go ahead and add, you know, more Kinect support. They could go ahead and add better graphics. They could go ahead and make it to where the hard drive is larger, because we saw the larger hard drives inside the new Star Wars ones. Faster loading times. I think, you know, something like that would be really good.
Less horrendous screen tearing and things like, you know, just like, I guess, like higher frames, you know, there's a lot of little stuff that, and Adam, you
so
do make a good
point. So
that
doesn't red ring.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously.
Well, that was just a hardware design issue. That's not a problem with the specs of the 360.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, so it's just like going into something like that. And there was one other one that I thought that they could go ahead and add in there. And
The casual sort of what hesitant to use that term, but like just like your everyday gamer that you'd meet on the street probably doesn't really care all that much how much RAM is in an Xbox 720. You know, it's just sort of like, I want to put the game in, I want to play it, and I want it to engage me. So, you know, kind of what Adam's saying is, like, so is the new hardware going to make games more engaging all of a sudden?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's going to expand the capabilities of what developers can do. I think we're going to get, not photorealistic graphics, but, you know, there are certain games where you can still tell they're polygons, they're pixels, it's still not as smooth as it could be. And so, you know, we'll get that. We'll get better sound. You can just fit more onto the disc. Like with Mass Effect 3, switching discs every 30 minutes at really weird times gets rid of that kind of issue. But as far as the timeliness of it, well, yeah, that's the thing. I think that it's pretty well timed. I mean, Microsoft has gotten an amazing run out of the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. And by waiting, I think, until that demand has started to trend downwards, they're going to be able to dovetail that consumer base into the new hardware by the time it's ready. And it's going to increase the demand for the new hardware when it's ready, instead of putting it out when demand is still solid for the 360, because that's just going to hurt the new hardware. Because if you can buy a 360 and there's still a lot of them out there and you're going to get a good price on it, and there's so many games readily available for it.
Yeah, but they need to. One thing is that I hope to God they go ahead and make it backwards compatible, because if they don't, that's going to be, you know, bad news bears with the size of the catalog that they have, and you know, with the Kinect games and everything like that. But you know, we talked about it before with the way that Nintendo should handle the Wii and the Wii U.
Yeah.
Maybe go ahead and keep the Xbox 360 right now and the Kinect. You know, because we saw the price drop last year. Go ahead and make that to where that's more of like the family console, and then have the 720 just be balls to the wall and stocked with all sorts of glorious shit, and have that for the hardcore, you know, the hardcore people, because we are a large demographic. You know, we are, and it's, I've said this before, and I can't remember how long ago it was, but essentially, the hardcore, we're the heart of the industry. Yeah, there's all these people who are casual gamers and stuff like that. But really, without us, you know, you're taking away their legs, you know, just to go ahead and stand on. And so I think that if they go ahead and they do something like that, where it's, you know, it's packed with all of this goodness in there, that might be a really good idea. I'm not saying to not make it to where, you know, casual stuff would be on the 720, if that's what they go ahead and call it, in which I sincerely hope they don't.
There's no reason why they would.
No, yeah. It's not going to be 720.
I hope not. But, you know, if they go ahead and they do something like that, you know, so many people are craving a new console. So many of us are sick of where we're at right now because, you know, yeah, Microsoft has gotten some life out of the 360, but it's a fluke. I don't think that should become the new standard.
See, here's the thing, though. I mean, with the next console, I don't see Microsoft fitting into that pattern, well, or that mode of keeping the 360 around as a lower end and then putting out the next console as a higher end and keeping the two platforms live. Like,
no one's been successful doing that.
Yeah, yep, and here's the thing. They're going to want their best and biggest in everyone's homes. They're going to design all of their smart glass stuff. They're going to design all of their home entertainment stuff around the new console because that's what they want to push into everyone's living rooms.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Vita, how that bombed partially because Sony was still supporting the PSP, especially in Japan, which would have been the major market, and they were putting out more PSP games and Vita games. PS3, like, they were still putting a ton of support behind the PS2 at the time. Like, they really, you have to focus what you're going to do in order to be successful, I think. And I hope to God they decide to go on another 10-year plan like this, because with all, like, smart glass and everything they're putting in that, I'm not going to be able to buy it all in 4 years when they come out with one. So I think they really do have to start planning out with these more sophisticated consoles a longer life cycle just so people can keep up with it.
I also think as well, Lindsay mentioned backwards compatibility. While the vast majority of us would want that, I actually can see that being a business decision where they decide not to, just to force higher adoption rate on the new console. If they make it attractive, an attractive enough proposition to people going, well, here you go, new console, but your 360 games aren't going to work, so you might want to sell that and the games and then get the new stuff.
I think that pushing backwards compatibility on the new console will help adoption rates because the library of available library at launch is going to be
ridiculous.
It's not going to be as full, obviously, how can it be, as the 360 library is. So by putting out a console that says, hey, here's a new console, it does this and this and this, here are some new games for it, and guess what? You can play your old games on it, so you don't need to worry about having your 360.
Yeah.
Sell your 360.
But then you get some people who could just go, well, if I can play my old games on that, why don't I just... Unless it magically upscales everything to 5060p or something like that, you know.
That'd
it's like
insane.
I don't know, so some people will be like, well, I could just play it on my 360 and have the same experience on my 1080p TV.
Now, does the 360 do 1080p or 1080i?
It does 1080p.
It's not naturalized, is it? I mean, it upscales to that, I believe. Or it's not native. But I still think it's a double-edged sword because I never play my backwards compatibility. That's the thing, is I'm not sure like how much people will be playing that. I guess for the people that decide to get rid of their Xbox or get rid of their PS3 when they adopt a new console, might like it, but I don't think that it's going to be a make or break situation. But I can see them putting out the new Call of Duty on Xbox, obviously, this year, the next year putting it out on Xbox and putting it out on the new Xbox, and then the year after only putting it out on the new consoles. I think that that's the sort of thing that would really push adoption rates if they were really behind doing that.
And I think that backwards compatibility is going to be a bigger issue with the upcoming generation because of stuff like achievements and trophies and how online consoles have become.
Yeah.
That you're going to want to keep, for example, my achievements. I don't want to start a brand new set of achievements when I get the next Xbox. I want my achievements to be where they are. I just want to add to that. I want my
Xbox
Live account to work between Xbox 360 player and a next Xbox player. I want, just because it's become so big and so pervasive, it really needs to be carried into the next console.
Well, you were able to go ahead and bring in your Xbox gamer tag onto the 360, so that isn't going to be an issue. But
would you, if you had someone online on the Xbox and someone online on the 360, could you chat to each other? Were the two Xbox Lives integrated, or were they separate? I don't know. I didn't really do much Xbox.
And will they let both, like, will they let you have an account on both systems? Like, say I want to keep my 360 up and running.
Well, here's the thing.
Well,
no, here's the thing. It's like if you have two 360s in the same household, you know, you can't go ahead and have the account active on there.
Right,
you can
right.
have them both on the console, but you'll have to go ahead and download everything for whatever console that you're going to play on.
Right, so what he's saying is that for the next console, keeping in mind that it's two different hardware, you know, revisions, will they then allow you to have your account on one Xbox 360 and
I don't know.
One Xbox? Like that's something that would be necessary.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, I mean, you would obviously be able to bring it over, but I'm pretty sure if you wanted to play on the 360, you might have to go ahead and download it again or go ahead and put it on a memory stick, you know, like people go ahead and do now. Yeah. So you could go ahead and skirt around it because, I mean, that's just the way that it is now. So
right, but hopefully that's something they'll change. I mean,
yeah, if they change it, yeah, that'd be great. But no, I think that, you know, they're going to be coming out with Halo 4 and they're going to be coming out with probably a Halo 2 remake.
That's been rumored.
Yeah, it's inevitable. So I think that, you know, unless the new Xbox came out with a new Halo at launch, they better have backwards compatibility. Because if they don't have Halo at launch, that's a massive, massive, massive franchise for them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an Xbox exclusive to not have that or to not even offer backwards compatibility. So you could go ahead and continue to play that. That's going to really hurt them.
And they better come out with some new IPs to push or some great sequels to push for a new Xbox too. That's another problem. I haven't heard anything about another game coming out. So that's another thing that I'm not sure why I want to buy the new Xbox yet. Yeah. So it's the same thing with the Wii U, like all the Wii U titles that they've announced so far, even though we don't have a release date or a price, even though it comes out in like 5 months. Yeah. When there's no marketing or anything else, I guess they're taking the Vita approach.
Oh, Nintendo. To talk about it.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things where I have absolutely no interest in the console because there's no games for me to play on it, and they haven't shown me any benefit to it yet.
To be fair, at this point, the console isn't really even a console yet. It's just dev kits. There's been no marketing for the console itself.
Which is bizarre.
Like, well, no, not necessarily. I mean, we just haven't gotten to that point in their marketing cycle where they're like, okay, we're ready to push this out to the public.
Here's the thing.
They better get a move on because, Adam was saying, I have absolutely, there's been nothing that has made me think, oh, the Wii U. It's nothing.
Oh, the Wii U. I thought we were talking about the Xbox.
No, we're talking about the Wii U. No.
Yeah, because we're talking like three, four.
Way behind.
Yeah, 4 months for it to come out. Oh, yeah, Xbox and Sony, they have tons of time to do that. And hopefully Sony learns from PS3. And obviously Microsoft, they know how to market.
And both Sony and Microsoft are holding off until they see how the Wii U does. And what the reaction to it is.
Yeah.
Because they will learn lessons from the Wii U launch. No matter good lessons, bad lessons, whatever happens during the Wii U launch, Sony and Microsoft will pay attention. They will learn and they will apply what they have learned to their own launches.
We hope. Because the thing is if Sony didn't learn from their PS3 launch and did the same what they did with like the PSP Go and then, you know, the PSP Vita and everything that's going on, I don't know. As far to kind of compare and say, you know, oh, well, whatever is next gen for Sony and Microsoft, you know, they'd go ahead and see what's going on with Nintendo. On one hand, I agree. On the other hand, that's like saying that Nintendo's coming out with the N64, but PlayStation's about to go ahead and come out with a disc-based system. Oh, we need to go ahead and see what they do. Because that is seriously, in my opinion, how far behind the Wii U is compared to even right now. Like, if the Wii U comes out tomorrow, it still is behind the 360, and the 360's been out since 2005.
Yeah, but what they're going to look at is they're going to look at the reaction to the gamepad or the Wii Pad or whatever it's called. Yeah. They're going to look at the reaction to a lot more than just the graphics. There's a lot that they can still work with before their announcement.
Yeah, there's
and
that.
And how that also, casual market carries.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like there's that. But keep in mind, though, that, you know, if we're talking, if Microsoft is worried about, what was it, glass, right?
Smart glass.
Yeah. If they're worried about, oh, if the smart glass, you know, we might want to nix this and not have it with our new Xbox because the Wii, you know, whatever is not doing so well. That's two completely separate things. The smart glass already is 10 times better than what is going to be coming with the Wii U. You know what I mean?
Well, and the smart glass for them is a completely different strategy. For them, smart glass is integrating multiple devices into one cohesive, essentially.
Right, I'm just saying I hope that they don't. I'm just saying I hope that it doesn't make them hesitant, because they should know that there already is a difference in product.
Oh, yeah, they'll look at Nintendo's Wii U launch for very different reasons than that.
I think that they really need to get on the marketing thing, because, you know, people and families right now, they're saving up for holiday shopping, especially with the way that the economy is right now. People need to go ahead and plan ahead and budget. And if they don't even have these numbers, it's going to make them hesitant to even want to go ahead and get, you know, this sort of thing, because they don't know what it is. And people don't want to go ahead and make a blind purchase, essentially, or, you know, not having this kind of information. And so it's really going to hurt them. And they need to go ahead and think that we need to go ahead and start getting this information out there. We need to go ahead and do this push, making our consumers more informed, especially because of the economy.
Well, and they have Nintendo was obviously victorious this generation, far and away, but it was because they picked up all the casual gamers and the people that we never really expected to see. And if they don't carry over, you know, Microsoft and Sony can be like, okay, well, the move and the Kinect obviously didn't do well. Now the casual market's kind of dropped off for this cycle. We need to concentrate on X. I think that's really what we're going to see with the Wii, is how this gigantic industry we have now is going to carry with all these casual gamers.
Well, and I don't see the Wii U having the same success as the Wii did with the casual market, because market, if they've already got a Wii, it's not likely that they'll see the need to upgrade to a Wii U.
No, they're not that kind of consumer.
No, they have a Wii, the Wii does what they want to do, then they're mostly, I feel safe in saying, fine with that. Eric's collecting dust like ours is.
Yeah, or it's or
Nintendo, you know, but since Nintendo has made this push, like they did at E3 last year, making sure they were making it clear that they want this hardware for the hardcore gamers, they're the ones that they had in mind.
Alienate them.
And they're bringing out, you know, Darksiders and Arkham and all of this kind of stuff on the Wii U. They're changing their direction now, because I think they know that they're not going to have the same casual success that they had with the Wii. And so they're trying to dig in to the rest of the market, but they're not.
But we already own those games. That's the problem.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
I've already played them all.
I'm not going to buy them again on the Wii U. I have no need.
Right.
No,
unless,
I mean,
like, I know someone
has, like,
who buys
crazy
every
features.
Single. Like, I know, well, like, oh, you, for example, Adam, you have Mass Effect on both consoles?
Yes.
Okay, and PC?
Not on PC. I have Mass Effect 1 on PC, not Mass Effect 2.
PC. That's right. And then I know a guy, Paul, who has Darksiders on everything, and he's going to buy Darksiders 2 on everything, just because he loves the game, and he supports it, and he wants it on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe if, you know, Darksiders comes out on the Wii U, maybe he'll buy a copy for the Wii U. But he's not going to buy one because he really wants to play it on the Wii U.
There would just have to be such a huge amount of extra features on it for me to buy a console and a game. It's the console selling that worries me, is I don't need to buy it for Darksiders. If I ever have a Wii U, sure, maybe I'll pick it up. But what do they have that is unique to them that I need to buy?
So far, Rayman Legends.
Right. And that's it. And I don't know if that's quite enough for me to convince me yet.
Yeah, Rayman looks good. Zombie U looks really good. And it's really weird because, you know, Ubisoft is, like, really behind the Wii U, which I think, you know, hey, good on them. You know, I think that's great that they are openly getting behind it. No, I mean, that's true. But, I mean, I'm just saying that I can't really think of any other dev that's out there right now, dev pub, that, you know, is showing so much support behind it. Or maybe I'm just not paying attention. But
which is entirely reasonable.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, we're talking about the casuals and stuff like that, you know, and maybe that they're reluctant in order to go ahead and buy this, the Wii U and everything. And, you know, there's also the chance that some of them, you know, they didn't want to have to constantly have a controller in their hand the whole time to do something, you know, like Wii Fit or whatever, or you know, the dancing and stuff like that because of the way that the sensor was. And maybe they jumped ship and got a Kinect because, you know, it'd be more accurate. And, you know, it's hands-free, and, you know, there's all the little fun games that you could go ahead and get, especially if you have kids. They have, you know, Once Upon a Monster, the Sesame Street game, you know, and so they have all the stuff like that. But, you know, there's a reason why that the term casual is applied to them. They aren't in the market, you know, really the ones who go ahead and keep up on the trends like we are. You know, and I'm pretty sure that there are some, you know, so I'm not, you know, trying to overgeneralize or saying that every single casual player is this way, but I'm pretty sure that for the vast majority, you know, obviously this is all assumption, that, you know, they're not, you know, the ones who would go ahead and like read the gaming magazines on a monthly basis or going and reading the blogs and, you know, paying attention at what's happening at trade shows like PAX and E3 and stuff like that. You know, that's when you're getting more into hardcore, yeah, the enthusiasts and those people who have put in, you know, a lot of time into it, or, you know, wanting to go ahead and get into it. And so maybe the transition from a casual to a hardcore, it's not happening as often as perhaps it would need to. And so we're going to see that decline. We're going to see that number dwindle down because, you know, they might be the kinds of folks who would maybe be best suited for like a Farmville where you go ahead and you do what you need to do for like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 minutes, if that. Or like Hero Academy and games like that on like iOS, you go ahead and you do a couple of things of what you need to do, do your turn, and then you could go ahead and come back to it later. Or if you have a game waiting for you, you have the notification and you could go ahead and do it whenever. Those kind of games might be better suited to them rather than binging like we do.
The people that I've talked to, obviously, off the record, but the devs that I've talked to are not all that excited about what the Wii U is bringing to the table and what it can possibly do. And the things that they've said are they're not exactly looking forward or expecting a whole lot of sales or anything really out of the Wii U. So that, I think that's pretty telling as well, is even though they're making games for the system, they're not exactly behind it as maybe they would be the new Xbox or the new PlayStation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm also just saying the casual market in general. It's like I could see the casuals sustaining things such as downloadables or little Facebook games or you know, things on like iOS and whatnot. I can see them going and sustaining and doing really well in that kind of area. I just don't see them putting enough support behind consoles that we might. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's a feeling that I have. I don't see that happening. And while I can appreciate wanting to make something to accommodate, you know, that chunk of the gaming culture, you know, the casuals and everything, like, you know, with Kinect, you know, we saw they did a fantastic job, or, you know, like little games like, Just Dance, Dance Central, you know, and the little Kinect Fun Labs and all that stuff that they have, you know, I think that's fantastic. You know, definitely go ahead and include them, but keep in mind that is not you're not going to sustain, you know, you're not going to get your profits from that. You'll maybe see little bumps and increases, you know, fluctuations here and there, you know, throughout the fiscal year, but we're the ones who are plunking down the money, you know, we're the ones, you know, that are willing to, like, you know, sell our legs or, you know, donate some plasma or, you know, like go crazy to make sure that we can go ahead and have this.
But how many of us are there compared to how many of them there are?
Here's the thing. They perhaps they outnumber us. You know, they very well could. They could outnumber us, but the frequency in which we purchase is, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, but I mean, here's the thing. If you've got, I'm not disagreeing with you, but you've got a market of people who are going to have the disposable income to go out there and continue to spend money on this kind of stuff. And then you have a much larger market of people who are going to have that money, and they're going to go out, and every now and then they'll buy something. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. It adds up.
The interesting thing is how they'll move to buying digitally, because a lot, you know, there's obviously a lot of the people that bought the Wii were parents or grandparents or people that aren't necessarily buying it for themselves or buying it for children who don't have things like credit cards or debit cards, and then asking them to put their information online to purchase every game if we start moving towards that or doing more downloadable content. That will also be a very interesting transition. Obviously, Nintendo's never really dealt much with that besides the overpricing of everything on the Wii Channel, but it'll be interesting to see if they go to digital and if Microsoft and Sony, who definitely will, how much they'll get out of that.
Yeah, but I don't know, Chris, what you're saying, though, is that it's like, okay, you know, for some people who really aren't into video games, I see them to be more apprehensive in plunking down, you know, we'll say $300+ on a new console that, you know, at launch probably is going to have more of the hardcore titles. I use hardcore as in, like, staples for that kind of console, you know, such as a Mario or whatever, you know, because Mario might not be their forte. You know, maybe they're going to want to go ahead and have a Just Dance game, and Just Dance might not be at launch. I think that, you know, there's going to be that reluctancy to go ahead and spend that kind of money and then go ahead and spend the $60+ on that game. Whereas they'll be fine with, if they already own something like an iPhone, you know, going in, downloading, you know, 99 cents or, you know, $4.99 or whatever, or, you know, like I said, going and playing something on Facebook, because there's minimal financial investment for them, but they're still going and getting that, and, you know, they're still getting that enjoyment. And plus, if it's something on a tablet or on an iPhone or whatever, there's a portability with it. Or, you know, if they like the fact that, you know, say they go into Facebook at work, they can say, hey, I want to go in and play a little bit of Farmville or Song Pop or, you know, whatever. They can go on and access that, whereas they can't go ahead and do that. And especially if they don't have the time to go ahead and get into something like a Final Fantasy, which, you know, I highly doubt that a lot of casual gamers get really, you know, hardcore into Final Fantasy. Again, I could be wrong, but, you know, something like RPGs, you know, that takes a lot of hours to go through. Like Amalur, for example, I think I barely hit over 100 hours in Amalur, and I'm not even close to being done.
Well, it's the move to free-to-play. I mean, it's part of that whole situation. I obviously look at the Old Republic now going free-to-play. Like, people want quick, easy, cheap, non-committal ways of getting product and getting the most out of a game. Which is, I think, completely reasonable. But consoles are going to have to go that route eventually as well. It can't just be PC games. So it's going to be strange, which is another reason I'm hesitant about the new consoles, is because I don't think that they're quite embracing it yet. And I'm curious to see how the adoption rate with all the free-to-play games on PC, if people are going to still go to the console and pay for Xbox Live and, you know, maybe pay for a better Sony service, and if they're going to want to do that, or if they'll just want to connect online with people for free.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there is that. I think, you know, with regards to BioWare and stuff, I think that what they've done so far with the Mass Effect 3 DLC, where, you know, the multiplayer stuff, it's all been free. I think that's fantastic.
So far, at least.
So far, it's been free. But I think they've come out with, what, 3 or 4 packs now?
I can't recall. I don't care enough about the multiplayer to pay attention to
that. I enjoy it, and a lot of people do. And so I think it's really great, though, that they're going and they're coming out with all of this DLC, which, you know, additional maps, additional weapons, you know, more characters that you could go ahead and unlock and play as, and it's all free. I think that something like that is really nice, because, you know, people already made the initial investment with not only the console and the Xbox Live service, but also by purchasing the game. You know, so why not go ahead and kick them, you know, some free content?
Yeah, but not every company is BioWare.
Well, true.
Some companies care about giving you a good ending to a game. Hey, and here we've hit our 2 minutes of hate for Mass Effect, our weekly podcast staple.
It's funny that Lindsay actually mentioned Farmville, and it immediately made me think of The Ville, which immediately made me think of Zynga, which immediately made me think of EA laying the smackdown recently.
No, Zynga's been... They haven't had a good week and a half, because there was first, what was it, two two Wednesdays ago, there was the news about, what was it, like a 40% stock drop or whatever, yeah, and craziness. And then last week on Tuesday, there was the news about them being sued for insider trading. And then on Friday, the news was, I think it was Friday, the news went and hit about them being sued by EA, saying that The Ville is a ripoff of The Sims. So
I just thought it was great that they looked so similar. So like EA submitted the complaint and they had, mm-hmm, like screenshots, side-by-side screenshots and some video of how similar these two games were. And at one point they get it wrong themselves. They label one screenshot as The Sims Social, whereas in actual fact it's The Ville and vice versa. It's like, it's that similar that they got it wrong in their own complaint.
Well, which, and then kind of
wins
to,
the case for him right there.
Well, yeah, to be fair to Zynga though, Zynga retorted saying, well, you know, Cityville, which has been out longer than The Sims Social,
yeah,
already laid a lot of these foundations. So if you want to say that, you know, someone's copying, technically Cityville came before The Sims Social. But then you could turn around and say, well, okay, SimCity came out how many decades before Cityville?
Yeah. Right, right. Or there's even, you know, like Civ and stuff like that. I mean, it's different, but, you know.
It's our overbloated industry now because things have gotten so ridiculous. Like a company like Zynga is one of the biggest players where, you know, I don't think it's going to last. It's just like Facebook where it's sold for an insane amount of money and now everyone's kind of like, oh, shit, maybe we shouldn't have done that. I think Zynga's sort of the same way where everyone's like, oh, they're worth billions and billions. And now, hey, maybe not such a good investment. I think we're going to see a lot of companies like Zynga and the casual game stuff disappear or go to really tiny iOS-type games and contract quite a bit.
Well, it's something. There was something I saw last week or the week before now about Zynga, that the majority of their revenue comes from a very small percentage of their user base through all of those freemium Facebook games. Mm-hmm. And just a slight change in that small percentage reverberates very, very much through their revenue stream. Mm-hmm. So you're basing all of this on a small percentage of players, where any, you know, minor to major adjustment is going to cause a problem.
Yeah.
And I mean,
that's not solid business right there.
No, I mean, that's a pretty big gamble. You know what I mean? Just to go ahead and essentially say, hey, company, we are going to go ahead and put all of this on this really tiny percentage. How do you guys feel about that? And for, you know, just everybody to nod their head going, okay.
Yeah, and we're going to depend on moms and high school kids playing Farmville in their classrooms on their cell phones. Yeah, that's going to be a really well thought out user base that'll be there for 10 years.
Well, like, and you know, like I've played Zynga games. You know, I played Farmville. I remember it was when Chris and I, when we started dating, I remember I would actually log in to the place I was working at. I'd, you know, go into my Facebook and, you know, go ahead and do my little Farmville and, you know, go into other people's farms and, you know, go ahead and, you know, do all that. But then I was like, okay, so I can only do so much in a day. Well, I don't really like that too much. You know, I want to go ahead and I want to do more. You know, I really want to get my farm on. You know, it's like, what if I have an hour and I really just want to like farm the shit out of my Ville? And that's going to be the next sequel. Farm the shit out of your Ville. You just heard it, folks. Exclusive right here. But, you know, it's like, what if I really wanted to go ahead and do something like that? And I'm limited to what I can go ahead and do. Or, you know, I'm timed and I'm like, but that's how they get you. You know, you're just counting it down and you're waiting. And then now you can, with your iPhone, you get the notifications and, ooh, that's how they get you.
But I think the iPhone is a much better service because it's in your pocket. So if you pull it out and you've got a warning, okay, I can grab that in a few minutes. Like, that's why I think the Facebook stuff, people aren't going to stay logged into Facebook all the time when they can be logged into mobile.
Right.
It's just like with all the Facebook, their timeline, and, oh, you can watch what people are watching on Netflix and jump in. Well, I have not logged into the Facebook desktop site in probably 2 years, except I just use it on my phone. I think that a lot of people that would be consistent gamers and would stick with stuff like Farmville just because it's, you know, it is fun. It's, you know, good to do when you're, you know, on commuting or whatever. We're not going to be logging into it from anywhere but our phones, and that's going to kill their revenue after a while.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, there definitely is that. Or was it